Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Heather Gring and Michael Bosworth. Heather Gring is the rare book curator at the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library. Michael Bosworth is the executive director of Western New York Book Arts. Both speak to me about the upcoming exhibit, A.P. Gorney, Different from the Rest, an exhibition presented by the Rare Book Room of the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library, featuring artist books, prints, and rare archival materials by A.P. Gorney. Drawing on new acquisitions and digitized resources, the exhibition explores how Buffalo's cultural landscape shaped an internationally recognized artist who worked outside established artistic channels. Information about the exhibition at both the library and Western New York Book Arts is in the show notes. In this interview, we speak about performance art, legacy, and the longevity of printed material. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Heather and Michael. I guess the first question is maybe for readers who aren't familiar, can you give us a little kind of biographical sketch and of the work of A.P. Gorney?
Yeah, I can start fielding that, but then I'll turn it over to Michael. And so thank you. Yeah, first of all, just thank you for making the space to meet with us. And so the work of A.P. Gorney is honestly really hard to define. He falls into many different categories. He is known most prominently on a national level as a master printmaker. And printmaking is really the realm where people, you know, speak with such acclaim about his work. I was lucky enough to have him as a professor at Buffalo State myself about 20 years ago, and that's where I first learned about him and learned about his work. And yet what I've come to realize through this process is how much of his work I had no idea about, despite the fact that I also worked at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center for over a decade, and so I encountered his work in different capacities. And yet until now, I realize like he's like a kaleidoscope or he's like a prism. Like it's so hard to take in the whole. And any way you look at him, it looks different, right? Mm-hmm. So he is known as a printmaker. But what I've really been so excited by in doing studio visits with him is seeing his book works as well. He's made a number of different artist books, some for artistic purposes, some for himself, for form and function purposes. And so then there's the other aspect of him, which I have known about, but I had never experienced, which is him as a performance artist. And so some of my earliest memories of him talking at Buff State is about some of his performance art pieces that he had done. But at that time, I was so young, I didn't really understand how to wrap my head around him. And it's only now, nearly 20 years later, and my own growth along the way as an art historian and a rare book curator and an archivist, that I've really come to appreciate the depth of his performance art pieces and the subversive nature of how he's kind of integrated it into his career within American art history. And so I'm actually going to lift up one example, which will be a wonderful tie-in with Michael here. Many years ago, when he was my professor, I recall him talking about a performance art piece he did at the College Art Association annual conference in Toronto. And for that piece, he got up on the stage and he was dressed as the white clown Pierrot or Gil from the history of the Commedia dell'arte. And the panel discussion was all about shame and censorship. I believe this was 1999, you know, so it's still really as we are today exploring these topics. But he got on stage dressed as this white clown and proceeded to read a lecture that he had written about how shame is a human concept. And since he is divine, he does not feel shame. And as he's reading this lecture, he's also stripping down naked. And then he proceeds to start whipping himself with a whip that he has to incorporate, you know, this aspect of pain and what it is to flagellation within the, you know, Catholic context. And then he dresses up again, this time in a business suit, in a way to kind of signify, you know, from one sad clown suit to another. Right. So this is one of the earliest things I remember him telling me about many, many years ago. And yet I had no freaking clue what the heck he was talking about. Now getting to work on this exhibition with him, we have digitized many of his archives, and I have finally digitized his essay that he read. The title is a bit controversial, but that aspect is kind of included in some of his work. And so the title of the piece is, I have no shame, for I am a goddamn fucking saint. And, you know, this is the piece he read. So now we have the digitized archives related to these pieces. And certainly this is one piece in a much bigger body of work around what it is to be on the outside as a gay man and trying to insert himself and also make space for himself within the larger paradigm that's oftentimes trying to marginalize him. And so the reason that is such a kind of tie-in with Michael is just in conversation about this the other day, I think we put it together that Michael was there to see that piece at the College Art Association.
Yeah, I was third row back behind a Mountie. As soon as he started taking his clothes off, the Mountie got up and stormed out of the place. It was most of the audience members laughed lightly. But it was an interesting time. It was kind of the tail end of the 90s culture wars that we
Yeah, with the NEA re-entered. Kind of just 5 years earlier or 6 years earlier. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was also Toronto, which is it's a different country, a different place. It's an interesting piece to bring to a, that normally if you go to a College Art Association conference, they're very, not dull, but, you know, academic. And this was a much more interesting way to open up a discussion.
So I lift up, we're telling this story here because I think this is such a perfect example of That's So Buffalo, which is like, you know, this story he told me 20 years ago, which I wasn't really ready to fully understand. Now over many different iterations, now that I have the archival materials and we're able to digitize them for the exhibit, we're able to give him his voice back more fully. And then in conversations about these things, I come to learn that, you know, Michael Bosworth just down the street at Western New York Book Arts Center was actually a person in that audience many years ago, you know, and I think that's also speaks to who AP is in our community. So he moved back to Buffalo over 20 years ago. He taught for Buff State later in his career for 20 years. And yet the vast majority of his acclaim and how he's known or how he really kind of was known in earlier eras on a national circuit is largely outside of Buffalo. And a lot of people in Buffalo don't really know about him, despite the fact that his print works are in the collection of the Vatican and Library of Congress. He went to the Yale School of Art for graduate school. He taught at the San Francisco Art Institute, at Temple University. You know, he's really been all over the place. And yet, I think because he is someone who is, he's doing so much all the time, and he's really trying to wrap in all these pieces together, it can be really hard to get a cohesive narrative out of him. And in one instance, you know, because he is so much more than one cohesive narrative. He's really working on a lot of levels all the time.
I'd love to ask too, I mean, as you're saying this, right, my instinct sort of is to just ask the question. So often in dramaturgy, when producing a play, we ask the question, like, why this play? Why now? Right. And so why was now the perfect time to kind of present A.P. Gourney different from the rest at the Rare Book Room?
So it's largely because of my relationship with AP that we've been able to bring this piece and kind of give him a wider stage. When I was still at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center as the archivist prior to joining the staff here 2 years ago, I had lightly been doing some studio visits with AP already, thinking about what would an exhibit be at the Birchfield. And when I took the position here and things didn't seem to be going forward with the Birchfield at that time, the fact that AP works in the book arts medium and makes prints as well, those are two established components of our rare book collection. And those are two active collecting criteria that we collect within. And so to have this opportunity to collect and acquire works by a local artist working in the book arts medium and making prints, you know, AP does exist with our existing collection focus. So that was part of what brought this together. But in conversations with him too, as I've come to learn more about his childhood growing up in Buffalo. He was born in a Roman Catholic Polish community on the deep east side of Buffalo in 1950. And his story, his childhood is Buffalo in the mid to late 20th century. And it was not, one of the things I love about his story is that it was not until he was about 10 and he started leaving the neighborhood to go to the Buffalo Museum of Science that his world expanded. And he started going to weekend classes there for over 10 years. And that's where he made his first friends who had different life experiences with him. He met, you know, children who were African-American and Jewish and all these different backgrounds that was way outside of the Polish Roman Catholic insular community he was from. And through his connections with the Science Museum, he started doing the theater workshops that they had regularly. They used to do weekly Gilbert and Sullivan musical performances for decades at the Science Museum. And he was like, he was part of that. He later also started going to the Albright Knox as a junior member and was able to be there during the really exciting moments of the late 1960s. He was there for a very important opening of the second Festival of the Arts Today, where he has this anecdotal story that I cannot confirm anywhere else, but he swears that he saw Marcel Duchamp do a prank, essentially do a little prank at the opening of one of the exhibits at the Albright. So all this is to say, learning about AP's history has helped to make this exhibit not just about AP's artwork, but also about him as a product of Buffalo. And that all of these multifaceted aspects that he encompasses are also very much him as a product of Buffalo. And everywhere he went, he still kind of takes that foundational root that he formed here with him.
Why is collaboration essential to telling Gorney's story?
Well, it's also a little serendipitous. I was thinking about A.P. Gorney about a year ago, just thinking about the people who are kind of Buffalo cultural assets, I'll say. People who have, you know, have been around Buffalo and have kind of been woven through the community for a number of years. And that was just one of the names that kind of popped up in my mind. So I was talking to just Barbara Rowe about it. Just the way kind of things seem to work out in Buffalo. We had this opportunity to show the work of Cindy Sofoletto. That's our next exhibition coming up. She's was the partner of Andrew Topolsky, who is another kind of important artist who came from Buffalo. They both left, returned to Buffalo. Buffalo has this kind of rich history of either producing artists or housing artists. It's the universities have kind of formed this pass-through that people come to Buffalo, are drawn in, remain, leave. But it's Buffalo has its own kind of unique ebb and flow in the larger arts world. And so that was my interest in the A.B. Gorney. It just kind of seemed to work and fit in very well with to follow up the Cindy Sofoletto show to feature his work. And, you know, Book Arts is a print and book-based organization, so it pairs well with the library. Heather just didn't have, like, the space to show one of his larger books, and we do. So that works out well, where you can, if you have a good throwing arm, you can hit the Western Europe Book Arts Center from the library. So it's very convenient to go back and forth between the two. And it just kind of makes for between us and just Buffalo, who live above us, collaboration. It just makes sense for this, especially such a small little section of the downtown area.
This is really sort of like the literary, especially like literary and historic core. Like you can really see it between just Buffalo Book Arts and then what we do both with the Rare Book Room and with the Grosvenor Room, which is the larger special collections department that we're part of. And I want to lift up that, yeah, you know, this is such a great example about why collaboration is necessary. So the largest book that AP made is 4 feet tall. It's 4 feet tall and it's like 3 feet wide. And it is full of his original prints, and not only his original prints, but his process works, all the different photographs he took and how he manipulated them to make the final works themselves. So, you know, from the perspective of a master printmaker's, you know, process books. It's an incredibly valuable resource. And yet in the rare book room at Central Library, I literally don't have a display case big enough to put it in, you know, like it's just, it will not fit in a case. And I cannot, even if it could, it would have to be closed. And then you can't really appreciate anything, right? And so it's just not possible for a public library to be able to display something, even though it is an artist book within the book medium. And yeah, it really was so serendipitous that Michael had this opportunity. He had a window of time after the Cindy Cefaletto show, and they have the capacity to really show this book in the way it deserves to be seen. And it will also create opportunities for the pages to be turned and for people who want to do a deeper investigation of the artistic medium to have a closer relationship than they could really have with it behind glass at the library. And like, that's it, you know, no one can do it alone. None of us can be everything. None of us can take care of every aspect. I think another beautiful reciprocal relationship here is that in Central Library and the Rare Book Room and our collection storage areas, we can collect and care for materials with better HVAC systems and collection care than certainly places like Western New York Book Arts Center or other smaller galleries could, right? So an ecosystem, an arts ecosystem needs all of us. And we all have a role and we all can do this so much stronger together than we could ever, you know, if we were trying to climb some hill to beat out each other, you know?
That's fantastic. So let's say a visitor or a guest wants to come down and see the exhibition. Where should they start? How long should they budget? And what might they see along the way?
Well, the one thing I want to lift up is that, so the exhibition at Central Library of AP's work is going to be up for probably most of 2026. It's going to be up for like at least 9 or 10 months, which is a very, very long time. But in contrast, the window of time when you'll be able to see the expanded works at Western New York Book Arts Center, that's going to be like 3 weeks. But right, so it's like there's this one window of time where if you really want to explore it in depth, this is when you want to come down.
So our plan was the Friday the 27th of February, we'll have a public opening from 6 to 9 p.m. And then, should we mention the VIP?
There will be a VIP opportunity that people can learn about more if they contact Western New York Book Arts Center. That will be happening earlier than the opening at 6. So we'll just say that.
And then we'll be closing on the 21st, which is a Saturday. And I would have the show up longer, but we have an Edible Books Festival coming up, which can get messy. And we don't want to mix the edible books with the rare print materials.
Right. That's fantastic.
So that would be the real window if people want to just, you know, like there's almost nothing like it that I can say other than to come and see this book for yourself. And
scale. A book tends to be a personal experience. You hold it in your hand, you sit with it in your lap. It's a one-on-one experience where once you reach a certain scale, it becomes this performative event. Someone has to open the book for you, display it to you. It may take several people to interact with the book. It can't be a personal experience. That's ideally how we're going to be kind of presenting it at the Book Arts Center. We'll be turning a page every day or several times a day, photographing, doing live streams, putting the imagery in a slightly more performative way onto the website, rather than having a static piece on the wall.
For visitors encountering Gorney's work for the first time, what do you hope they leave the exhibit thinking or feeling?
You know, the one thing I want to lift up is that I think it's, well, especially now that I know we're being recorded and possibly for a podcast type format, I admit that I hope people don't get the wrong impression, but what I led with when with his performance art piece, which kind of has this controversial title to it, because when you look at the vast majority of his work, there is nuance and there is subtlety, but he's often much more subtle with his sort of controversial takes or with the ways in which he's encouraging us to look at something differently, both physically and intellectually. And so I do think that I want the public to really come in and just take in the scope of his print media works first, because I think it then helps you understand and appreciate better all the ways that he moves beyond that. Not to, you know, every, you know, there's this one way of phrasing things within fine art production context, which is like, you can be abstract and you can be, you know, more less representational once you understand the rules of function and form and all these classical structures that can be, you know, very restrictive in their own ways. And I'm not necessarily saying I agree with that, but I am saying that it is this sort of art historical paradigm. The Picasso mentality, which is like, sure, you can make abstract stuff as long as you know how to do it right first, right? Which is very restrictive. What I'm trying to say, I guess, though, isn't aligned with that, which is to say, I want people to take in his print media first and then be able to understand how he's expanding beyond that once we understand better the really strong history of art production that he's participating within. I want people to see that he's got the chops before they then look beyond it and see all the different ways that he's playing with the form and the function, I guess. And I, you know, if that makes sense.
It does. But I want to pause for a second, though, and just sort of before, Michael, I want to hear what you have to say as well. But I just want to sort of pause and push back and say that, like, I think that the story and the experience they both recounted about the early work that you saw 20 years ago, people can see plays all of the time. And as a theater professor, I can tell you that they will forget them very quickly. The fact that you heard about something 20 years ago and it stayed with you to celebrate this person all this time later, I think is a wonderful entry point for our listeners to hear, and made me say, oh my goodness, if that person did that and had the bravery to do that, that's something that I want to make great effort to go see myself. So I think actually the story that you told and the fact that Michael was there, right, and the sort of serendipity with that is the exact reason why I said, let's make this a podcast, as opposed to being sort of worried or thinking, oh, I don't want, maybe that's not the perfect entry point for listeners. I think the fact that something that was done for one night lives in the mind of people 20 years later is the exact reason why we should be kind of having this as be a full episode. Sorry.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I had to just say that. Michael, sorry. So this is just, what do you hope that people are experience or feel or think about after visiting Western New York Book Arts?
Well, just to go back for a second, I was going to suggest it would be well worth reading that essay. I mean, it wasn't a dry academic narration that he did at the College Art Association conference. It was a performative piece of art that was on display. The essay kind of reflects that. It's a largely narrative based around autobiography, I assume. I haven't fact checked his autobiography, and I don't know how much of it was a story, but it was a piece of art that you were encountering, and not an academic discussion. It, you know, certainly led to more academic discussion, but the essay itself is well worth reading. And you know, seeing the work at the library or Buffalo or Western New York Book Arts Center, we do have this Western New York and Buffalo. There is this long, rich tradition of the arts that sometimes it's not that the arts community forgets about it. It just, Buffalo continuously tries to reinvent itself, which is admirable. But at the same time, there is this long, rich history that also needs to be studied and embraced and remembered.
And I want to lift up that, you know, the thing about performance art is that it's inherently temporal, right? Like if you're not there to catch the piece, all you can ever do is hear about the piece, right? And that's kind of what I'm in. I can only ever hear about this piece that Michael actually was there to see. And I like to contrast these two things between the temporal time-based nature of performance art with the longevity of print works and book media, right? Like books can last for centuries. AP's books may outlast every other media form of his work that exists, right? And it's very, and I think that having this opportunity to kind of showcase him more fully and not instead as just any of these one facets in this moment where I can do that is very special to me, especially as a former student of his, right? To now get to turn the lens back on him in this way that Buffalo kind of never really has. You know, he's been part of major shows in other cities. He's had major installations at the Franklin Institute of the Art in Philadelphia, you know, all these different places. And he's been part of shows in Buffalo. He's certainly been in the Art in Western New York exhibitions at the Albright Knox for the Buffalo AKG Art Gallery, multiple years from the 70s through the early 2000s. He's in the collection of the Birchfield from his time being a student himself at Buff State back in the 70s. And yet a comprehensive exhibition exploring him as the main subject really has not happened in Buffalo. And I really don't think it's happened anywhere. And certainly this is not, I would not say this is so much a retrospective of his work, because it's just one little gallery in, you know, Rare Books. And we will be able to do a more expanded analysis of his work during the period when we have the Book Art Center show as well. But I think this is more like an exploration of the artist in the context of Buffalo itself. And that's how I've kind of structured my exhibit in Rare Books. And that's because we have some really incredible resources in our Grosvenor Special Collections room that I was able to use to make this exhibit happen. So the thing about AP is that, you know, you ask one question of him and you get a half an hour long art history lecture in response. And it's not just, and it's wonderful. And if you like that kind of thing as I do, it's just, it opens up your world, you know? He's also like that as a person. And so I have this funny experience where I sent our Rare Book clerk to go pick up a few prints by him to bring back. And so that we could start, you know, working on layout and stuff. And I had told AP, I'm like, oh, look for some archival materials for me as well, you know? And our clerk came back with a truck full of not only all this original ephemera, but also mini DV tapes of his, some of his performance art pieces that I had never seen before. And because we have a digitization lab, our staff was able to scan all of his archival materials, which include all these playbills from the different plays in the Science Museum in the 70s. He was friends with Christine Baranski. They did plays together. And so she signed one of his playbills and said, up with surrealism and all this like really cute stuff that, gosh, it's just like it adds so much depth to a life lived, you know. But it's because of the resources we have in Grosvenor that I was able to not only digitize all of his print materials, but also digitize the mini DV tapes that had the video work. So we are going to be able to see some of his video performance, some of his performance art pieces that have been now digitized that even he hasn't seen in 30 years.
Tell us real quickly for people maybe who have never visited Western New York Book Arts, a little bit about the organization, how they can visit, how they can learn more. It's like, I guess, an elevator pitch, kind of include that for listeners who maybe have never encountered the organization before.
Well, Western New York Book Arts Center was formed in 2008. And it was formed as the Western New York Book Arts Collaborative. And it was designed to be an art space that was primarily focused on studio work. The way we exist now is still an extension of that. We have a large studio space. We have multiple letterpress machines, a variety of different printmaking and bookmaking equipment. And we have residency program. We have an exhibition space. We do members exhibitions. We do exhibitions like the Cindy Sofa Letter Show that's coming up, the AP Gorney. We have events throughout the summer, Book Fest. We have a Zine Fest event that comes up in August. We also have a consignment shop. So we're, like I said, we exist in downtown Buffalo. We're one of the things that you can come in downtown and do, on a weekday. The space is open and available. We have a shop that if people just want to come in and, look at some of the, consignment work that we sell, we, you know, serve a variety of artists throughout Western New York. We have workshops and classes people can take in printmaking and bookmaking, and a variety of other things as well. And we're, like I said, we're close to the downtown library. There's other businesses nearby. Evening House Books is just up the street. Just Buffalo Literary Society that I mentioned, they are our upstairs tenants. And we collaborate with them as well on a variety of projects.
we've talked a lot about the artist and about the exhibition, but Heather, before I ask you about the library, is there anything that we missed or anything that you feel you would like included either in the podcast or in the article?
Sorry. I was thinking about the library when you mentioned the library and all the different things about the library. I mean, get away from the Western York Book Arts Center, but you know, the library for me also just has such a long history, and it has taken many forms, you know, over the past few decades. It's been a resource for the downtown Buffalo and a larger, you know, Western New York area for such a long time. And it is kind of an important component of the city. And Western New York Book Arts are relatively new, but, you know, we do try to serve the needs of the city as much as possible as well. And it is important that all of these organizations find their niche, find their audience, try to collaborate as much as possible, not duplicate, but
amplify.
Yeah.
And work all do it together.
Right. And some of our organizations in Western New York can specialize and do, you know, some things very well. And it's not that having multiple organizations do something similar is competition. It's still worthy to pursue these things because you have a very large audience. So Buffalo is a surprisingly cultured place for the scale of city that it is, the resources that we have. As much as we can collaborate with other organizations, that is an important part of what we do.
Yeah, I'd love to lift up one of my favorite, just again, aspects of this collaboration with Book Arts, because the way I've really come to appreciate Book Arts too is that it's a place for skill development and pedagogical skills around what are largely lost art forms now. Like, how do you lay type to make a page of words? How do you lay out an image plate to recreate an image? Like, these things in a pre-digital world were known by a lot of people. And yet in this moment now, we really, especially the general public, really doesn't understand how prints are made. It is my hope that AP's exhibit will show examples of that. And I've already had this one really beautiful moment where these two young people came into the Grosvenor room one day and started just out of nowhere asking all these questions about printmaking and how printmaking works. And by the end of it, I had showed them some prints by AP and they were just over the moon looking at his work. And I was like, if you are this interested in printmaking, my young 20-something, early 20s young patrons, if you are this into this, you need to go across the street to Book Art Center right now and go learn how this stuff makes. And they did. These two young people, they went right over and I think they signed up for a class and ended up really finding a connection with what are largely analog technologies that are just like so far outside of the realm of people's everyday lives at this point. But they are important technology bases and knowledge bases, and we need to retain those. The only thing I would lift up that hasn't been mentioned thus far is I do want to lift up that a very important component of the exhibition at Rare Books is that we have conducted an oral history interview with AP. And so oral history clips of him talking about his experiences of growing up in Buffalo is really quite central to what I'm doing over in Rare Books at Central Library. So not only will you get to hear or learn about AP's past experiences in Buffalo, you will get to hear him in his own words speak about his life and his experiences. And I think that's a very important component too, is not just speaking for someone, but creating more opportunities for them to speak for themselves.
You know, I'd love to ask, because people might be listening to this interview and may want to say, hey, I want to check out or go down to the library, what are some other things that they can experience beyond this exhibit?
Sure. So we always have, we also, our other dedicated gallery space is our Mark Twain room. And so the Mark Twain gallery is devoted to one of America's favorite authors and characters, Mark Twain himself. And so not everybody knows this, but Mark Twain has a connection to Buffalo. He lived here for a few years and his wife was from here. But in addition to that, the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library and our Rare Book Room, we care for and we have the handwritten manuscript of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, perhaps one of the most important American novels, certainly, you know, in the last 150 years. And so we have the original handwritten documents that Twain wrote on, and that we always have a permanent devoted exhibit space to. In Central Library, we also have a maker space and a launch pad where you can learn how to do everything from do 3D printing to use sewing machines to participate in a craft circle. We have book groups, cooking clubs, and all sorts of different dedicated opportunities to expand your knowledge base in all sorts of ways. But yeah, come down to Central Library. There's always something going on.
Thank you so much for your time today. It was really excellent to speak with you. I look forward to seeing the exhibition and visiting Western New York Book Arts. So thank you very much for your time, and we will hopefully chat with you soon. Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Heather and Michael. Information about AP Gorney, different than the rest, can be found in the show notes. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly at buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like this show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matter Studios.